Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This podcast is brought to you by the Village of Bedford Park, your home for business. Over 450 businesses strong and growing with a safe, reliable Lake Michigan water supply. Visit VOBPbiz.com and bring your business home to the Village of Bedford Park.
Now, the WBBM Noon Business Hour.
It's 12:03, Wednesday afternoon, May 21st. Good afternoon. Thanks for joining us on the Noon Business Hour. I'm Rob Hart. Target and Lowe's are out with their latest sales outlooks for the year. We'll cover that in our next segment. But right now, an investigation finds that Kroger, the grocery chain, is overcharging on some sale items. And it's not the only retailer to face those types of accusations. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Bert Flickinger, Managing Director at the retail consulting firm, the Strategic Resource Group in New York. Bert, thank you for joining us today. And what is the essence of these accusations against Kroger?
The essence, Rob, is concerning, but not ubiquitous across the corporation institutionally. So there are a few outliers in terms of pricing changes with old tags or things not changed. And full disclosure, Strategic Resource Group, our firm, advises Consumer Reports that does the study. They're typically very responsible and objective. And in this one, it looks like the tips were from the union. Full disclosure, Rob, I've worked with the union leaders across the country, and where the genesis of this report is from Local 7 statewide in Colorado, with whom I've worked with Mia Contreras, the president, and her team. And they tend to be a very mercurial and confrontational union, and looking to blame the Kroger company for things that Kroger company typically is not doing to impair the consumer. In my experience, having worked with everybody from Walmart to Winco to Walgreens, Wegmans, everybody in between, Kroger's highly responsible, cares about price integrity more than anyone else. And some mistakes were made in a couple different instances, but those mistakes could be very well the same at Costco, at Winco, at Whole Foods, and everyone else. So I think this one with some union acceleration in terms of fanning the flames is an important story, but it's an important story overblown by a few random retail mistakes that Kroger took corrective action on right away, as Kroger always does, and Jewel Osco division of Albertsons typically does in Chicagoland. Corrective action was taken quickly, but certainly not institutionalized, and certainly not overpricing institutionalized, as Kroger and our Strategic Resource Group studies, pricing studies across America every year for 25 years, has one of the best reputations for price integrity. And my concern is, given the unions have struck Kroger, in effect, almost a de facto wildcat situation. Maybe some bad blood backstage between union members who blocked the Kroger Albertsons Jewel Osco deal, and unions, for whatever reason, and I think the wrong reason, are trying to make it tough for Kroger. And the key headline, Rob, is, as I was told by legendary UFCW and Teamster presidents, the enemy's not in the bargaining room between Kroger and Teamsters, Bakers, and retail clerks, USCW. The enemy's outside the bargaining room in terms of Walmart and Target and the other companies that refuse to let unions organize. So this is complex. It's got a lot of moving parts. But were I the expert on it, which I often am, I would say Kroger made mistakes. Kroger's being responsible, admitting to the mistakes. Kroger's taking corrective action. But it's not ubiquitous, Rob. It's not widespread because Kroger is one of the most ethical, honest corporations in America, which I would not say the same thing about Walmart and some of the others that we're not studying.
Bert Flickinger, Managing Director at the Retail Consulting Group Strategic Resource Group in New York, talking about this investigation that found that Kroger overcharged on some sale items. And Kroger, of course, is the parent company of Mariano's in the Chicago area. The bottom line, check your receipt. Make sure that the price that you pay is the price that you thought you were going to pay when you're walking up to the register.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Target and Lowe's are updating their full-year sales forecast as they report quarterly earnings. Let's discuss what these major retailers believe lies ahead with Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor, based in New York. Find him online, theretaildoc.com. Bob, thank you for joining us today. And let's begin with Lowe's, because we already heard from Home Depot, and they have not changed their guidance for 2025, even though home improvement stores are about as tariff-sensitive as any other category of the economy. What did Lowe's tell investors and analysts on their earnings call?
Yeah, they think they're going to be okay. They have not revised anything downward either. So they feel that it's strong. They had a strong quarter with their professional services people. The homeowners have gotten a little bit softer, but they've invested in the parts that make them money. And it seems to be, well received.
And then Target missed on their first quarter revenue estimates. Transactions fell. The retailer cut its full-year sales outlook. It, too, is dealing with tariff uncertainty. But once again, Target finds itself caught in the middle of the culture wars.
Yeah, I mean, we don't have enough time to go into Target, my friend. But, you know, it's a $24 billion company. It certainly is meeting a lot of people's needs. They've been stuck at about the same level for 4 years. The biggest problem with Target right now is they don't know how to manage supply chain. I mean, it is empty shelves in almost every store you look at, merchandise on the floor. They've cut employees back. You hear them complaining about they're not getting enough hours. And it was ludicrous that he said today, like, oh, and it's from tariffs. That's why sales were down. Like, come on. This is, you're joking, man. It's basic operationals. Be brilliant on the basics. And Target has missed it, and I'm wondering how long they're going to stay with this leadership, because clearly it is not winning. And they added some new department to try to turn it around. But the bigger issue is, where's the vision?
Well, it feels like this is a good place where the Noon Business Hour provides insights above and beyond the screaming and yelling you see on social media. Because if you were going to analyze Target just based on what you have seen on Facebook or on Twitter or on TikTok, the company's earnings are a response to the LGBTQ pride merchandise that was available in some stores several years ago, and then again suffering because it rolled back some of its diversity, equity, and inclusion efforts earlier this year. And as you said, and even though we may not have the hour to talk about it, Target's problems are way above and beyond exactly. Just the screaming and yelling and hot take industrial exactly. complex.
Yeah, I would agree. And I won't kid you. I do think the DEI was a huge miss for the brand. It was always a progressive brand. They were afraid of lawsuits. They're afraid of losing lawsuits to some ultra far right lawyers. And so they try to be preemptive, and it shot them in the foot. But even if that's the case, right, even if they say, oh, my gosh, how do they get out of it? I mean, there's no easy way. The same leader says, oh, sorry, just kidding, because now you've got the other side just as upset. I think the more important thing is you don't blame other people. You realize that you've cut your employees down. You've gone through and you've so mismanaged the supply chain that tariffs haven't even kicked in yet, Rob. I mean, realistically, what are they going to do for holiday in 2025? It was a disaster last year. So if you're listening, Target, what's holding you back from making a bolder change?
Well, I think the question about Target, and the one that I always have when I go in the store, is who is the competition? You would think at first blush it's Walmart, but is Target competing with Walmart, or are they competing with Amazon?
everybody's competing with Amazon, but you know, the reality is 80% of people still buy in a brick and mortar store. I can't say this over and over enough. We go into a store to discover. We go online to buy. So if I need a HP printer cartridge 54, I'm probably going to order from Amazon. I'm not going to a store. But if I go into a store, I'm open to discover, and that's why this is so important for Target and actually for Lowe's, because Lowe's does a brilliant job with their merchandising. You go in, you're like, oh, I need, I don't know, an electric cord, and you end up buying a couple of bedding plants and maybe some little fountain or bird seed, right? It's discovery. That's
Bob, it's like you, it's like you've known me all my life. that is every Lowe's or Home Depot run for me.
Right, and that's what, but that's what great retail was. That's what Target's. They're the ones that led the way on merchandising and forward thinking. And you would go, oh, I want this. When you're going in and rows of shelves are empty or one or two items, it doesn't make you feel confident about the brand. You're not intrigued. You just want to get in and get out. And it's a huge issue for them because everyone is looking and they just seem rudderless right now.
Bob Phibb, CEO of The Retail Doctor in New York. Thank you for joining us today. Find him online at RetailDoc.com. Coming up next, the pros and cons of paying off your mortgage before retirement.
The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
It's Personal Finance Wednesday, and as people near retirement, they may consider paying off their mortgage before leaving the workforce. Let's talk about what you should consider before doing so with Tony Orgorek, founder of Orgorek Wealth Management, who usually joins us live from the show. Shores of Lake Erie in Buffalo, but today he is joining us from France. Tony, thank you for joining us today, and I hope we can pull you away from one of the thousand fountains in your town to talk about this, whether or not you should pay off your mortgage before you retire.
Well, Rob, I think that people, at least our clients that we've worked with over, you know, over several decades, you know, we've found that people who retain a mortgage into retirement oftentimes have spending issues, and they may be living beyond their means. So we really advise that, you know, if at all possible, have that paid down. One of the big benefits, by the way, of doing that is that you free up a significant amount of cash flow, which you can use for recreation or any other kinds of activities. So it just makes a lot of sense.
For example, traveling abroad. That's one thing you could do when you don't have to pay a mortgage, have a monthly mortgage payment anymore.
Well, you got that right. And I think also, you know, when you're retired, the last thing you want to have to think about is, you know, budgeting and can I afford something? You know, you've worked hard your whole life, and I think it makes sense for it. Now, it's if you're retiring, Rob, it's Rob time, and you don't want to have to pinch pennies.
How many people generally, when they approach retirement, is selling a fully paid-off home? That's the cherry on top of their retirement saving plan. The house is fully paid off, and they use that home equity that they have to supplant their retirement savings.
Well, that's an interesting question because you know, in our experience, people years ago used to downsize in order to extract cash out of the home. But today, if they decide, you know, if they've got a two-story home and they decide to go, for instance, to a patio home, they're actually going to be shelling out more money than with their existing home. And I also find a lot of people today, if they've had mortgages, you know, they're locked in because they've refinanced them at low rates, tougher for them to extract some cash. One of the things I would advise against, though, are the reverse mortgages. Because oftentimes they keep people in homes that may be unsafe because they may have two or three levels. They really should be out of there on a one-floor plan, but they want to stay because they fight change, and sometimes that can be the worst thing for them from a safety standpoint.
And then how does this change things from a tax standpoint? Because if you don't have that mortgage payment anymore, you lose that tax deduction. So how does your tax math change once you pay the whole thing off?
Well, you know, I think the you know, the deductions are overrated because most people, based on the 2017 Tax Act, are filing, you know, they're not using the itemized deduction for the mortgage interest anymore. For the most part, what they're doing is just taking standard deductions. So for many people, especially people approaching retirement age, I think, you know, it's sort of a non-event for them for the most part.
Tony Ogorek, founder of Ogorek Wealth Management. We'll get you. We'll let you go back to your vacation in France. Go back to looking at that Cezanne. Thank you for joining us today to talk about paying off that mortgage before you retire. Still ahead on this Personal Finance Wednesday, identifying expenses that are quietly draining your budget.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Making financial decisions shouldn't feel like picking a TV show. Too many options, too much hype, and no way to know what's actually good. NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast cuts through the clutter. Their finance journalists break through real-world money decisions with clear, research-backed insights. From investing to home buying to credit cards, the nerds help you navigate major financial decisions with confidence. Leave TV to fate. Leave your next financial move to the nerds. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.
This is Chicago's news, traffic, and weather station, News Radio 105.9. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Stocks are trading sharply lower today. Joining us now on the Village of Bedford Park business line, reminding you to bring your business home, is Gary Culpbaum, President Culpbaum Capital Management in Orlando. Gary, thank you for joining us today. And the market activity has really picked up. The selling activity has really picked up in the last half hour or so. The Dow was down about 200 points, give or take, earlier in the session. Now down nearly 700 points. What explains this intraday move?
Rob, I think probably 100 times I have said to you and many others on my TV appearances to always watch 10-year yield, and yields are spiking today, and that's what's catching the market. The 10-year yield is almost getting to 4.6%. The 30-year is almost 5.1%. To me, that's dictated policy for a very, very long time at markets. When they skyrocketed during the inflation times under Biden, you know what happened then. So this is something that has to be watched very, very closely. I'm very worried that the Republican Party had a great chance to do something about debt and whiffed. And I think the market may be reacting to that. I'm sure there's other things involved, but if interest rates keep going higher, I think that's headwinds for the stock market and probably the economy, because that's your mortgages and your loans.
So basically, it seems like the bond market is rendering its judgment on this spending bill that's making its way through Washington.
Yeah, bonds are being sold off, by the way, not only here, but around the globe. The amount of debt worldwide is just, I'd like to use the word gargantuan, but I think it's gargantuan times 1,000. So we'll see how this plays out. But I tell everybody, always watch the 10-year yield. If it keeps going up, bad. If it starts coming down, good. And right now it is spiking up to the upside, and it's pretty much coming after everything today. And by the way, a little bit earlier, the NASDAQ was strong. The artificial intelligence stocks were strong, but they could not compete with the whole market coming in. I think we're over down over 700. We were down 850 just a few minutes ago.
Now, what happens, it seems like the overarching theme of this year, that whatever risk shows up, whether it's tariffs, whether it's budgetary matters, whether it's concern about spending in debt or what have you, it seems like after one day of selling off, or maybe 2 days of selling off, investors and the markets always find the sunny side of the street. And will that be the case again?
One can only hope. But look, the market topped out in January, did not bottom until April, when they realized crashing markets are not good, that came from the tariffs. So once they paused the tariffs, the market bottomed. But again, you never know what's going to creep into the system. And as I've said, you got to watch them yields, it's especially when you have so much debt. The amount that we just pay in interest, the taxpayer, is in the a trillion plus now. That doesn't go to roads or bridges or children or elderly or the infirm. It goes towards interest. It goes into a black hole of nothing. And I've always been worried, when is the market going to react to that? And let's hope what we're seeing right now is just a short-term blip and everything will be okay. But, again, we're at $37 trillion headed for $50.
Gary Culpom, President Culpom Capital Management in Orlando. Thank you for joining us today. Find him online at GaryK.com. Coming up next in Personal Finance Wednesday, tracking and eliminating expenses you may not realize are tapping your budget.
Investing 60 minutes each weekday for planning for the future. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
Hey, it's Personal Finance Wednesday. In this segment, we're putting the focus on identifying and possibly eliminating what may be stealth expenses. We welcome Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago. Sherry, thank you for joining us today. And we live in a subscription world, Sherry, and those $5 a month or $6 a month or $13 a month subscriptions to every little thing, it certainly adds up after a while.
Yes, they do. And it's so enticing because, you know, you could be on Facebook or you're just online and something pops up and the subscriptions come and it, you know, all of a sudden you don't realize what the subscriptions you have. So, you know, the first thing, Rob, I would do is look at your bank accounts and your credit card, maybe on a quarterly basis. You should do that for everything because there may be, you know, things on there that weren't correct, but just kind of review and really try to see, are you really getting value? Are you really going to that health club? Are you really reading all the books that you've signed on Audible? You know, are these subscriptions still what you're looking for?
Sherry, it's interesting you mention check your bank accounts once a month or maybe once a quarter, because as the father of three young children who have a lot of activities, Sherry, I check those things every day, two, three, four times a day, just to make sure that everything is on the up and up. But the issue seems like it's not just the subscriptions you have, but maybe the ones you forgot you had that really are a drain on your budget.
Yeah, and there is there's some apps that will track your subscriptions. One I know is Rocket Money and Truebill. They're ones that can track it. But I see a lot. I've seen with my kids too, is these free trials. You know, they'll give you a 2-week free trial, but guess what? You're putting your credit card in there, and after the 2 weeks, if you don't set an alarm or you don't remember, or you used it once and you forgot about it, it could be ongoing and you might be locked in for 3 months or 6 months. So be aware of those free trials. There's no free lunch.
Oh, yeah. That's something that that I do when we have the free trial for, because if you buy a new device, these days you get a subscription to something, a complimentary subscription to something,
right,
as part
right.
of as part of an enticement for, you know, buying a TV or an iPad or something like that. And I always set a calendar reminder for the day before the expiration date. Be sure to cancel that particular service if you don't really want it. And one other thing, too, I think is very important to point out is that if you cancel a subscription to a streaming service, make sure your kids can't reactivate that, because I've had a couple of situations with Netflix where we have changed subscriptions just because of a lower promotional fee, but the old account keeps getting reactivated because a child finds the iPad and turns it back on.
And, you know, you mentioned setting up a reminder. You can cancel a subscription even if, for example, it goes through July 15th. You can cancel it now, and then it just won't renew it. So you don't have to wait till July 14th to cancel it. But I have one more tip for your listeners, Rob, is if you go home and you all found like 4 or 5 subscriptions you canceled, take that money and deposit it into your emergency fund or investment account. Just take whatever you were paying for those subscriptions and save it, because it probably was in your budget already. So, you know, I love savings. So just another tip on that.
It's a good way to visualize what you might be losing as a result of those unknown or forgotten subscriptions. Sherry Greco-Rikus, co-founder of Rappaport Rikus Capital Management in Chicago, author of the book Maximize Your Return on Life. Thank you for joining us today. Join us at this time tomorrow for Technology Thursday. And still to come, the cost of the proposed CTA Redline extension is skyrocketing. We'll explain why.
Discussing the news affecting your money. The WBBM Noon Business Hour continues.
The cost of the proposed extension of the CTA Red Line from 95th Street to 130th Street is now pegged at $5.75 billion. That's about $1 billion a mile. We're joined by Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University in Chicago. Joe, what is driving this ballooning cost estimate for this project?
you know, really is making headlines. And we know that better transit service to the far south side is needed. You know, the Red Line is seen as sort of a flagship project to improve that. You know, but what's happened is, you know, the route has seen pretty big cost escalation, worth some $1 billion a mile now. And we're seeing civic groups, Civic Federation and others, you know, say we have to reassess, you know, do we have the right plan here? Is this doable? And it's unfortunately coming at a tough time for transit with the big fiscal cliff just around the corner.
Well, it also seems like this is coming at a bad time. Just a lot of rail projects are getting a bad rap across the country. And the latest one is the ballooning cost estimate of the Red Line extension project. But there's also been numerous stories written about the problems that California high-speed rail is facing. This was a bond issue that was passed in 2008 by voters. And we may not see a high-speed train run in California until well into the 2030s. So what, in general, why are these rail projects so expensive and why are cost overruns the norm?
You know, we're seeing here, like in the Red Line extension, there's more cost built in for sort of management services to handle this. And we're seeing that around the country. New York's faced this with, we have to find ways to build rail more effectively. And, you know, California, the Third Avenue Express extension in New York on the subway, now the Red Line here, we're just seeing some things happen that just make rail extensions so difficult. And I think here with the Red Line extension, we are seeing there's efforts need to build an elevated railway in parts. There is some relocation. But something seems out of line when the cost gets quite this high in an area where the population density isn't all that great. And so we're seeing a lot of watchdogs say, hey, we have to make sure, you know, bond issuing debt for this extension is something, you know, our region can handle. So that discussion's heating up.
At the end of the day, does this project continue? Does it become bus rapid transit? Or let's assume the service agencies are merged as part of a state bailout package. Do the powers that be instead focus on turning the Metra Electric into a CTA style service, because that line essentially serves the same geography?
Yeah, that's a great point. I think what people are calling for in this project, I think, is going to accelerate that discussion, is to make sure, you know, if we do pursue this, this is done with a full kind of regional cooperative analysis, because we do have the Metro Electric nearby, and there's plans to increase the speed of that. So there's sort of ready-made route there. There's the fact there's not an interchange between the CTA and Metra on this proposed extension is, you know, also raising some questions. So this is kind of a case study of how, you know, if we do pursue this, we have to make sure the right hand knows what the left hand's doing, and there's some questions about that.
Joe Sweeterman, professor of public services and director of the Chaddick Institute at DePaul University, thank you for joining us today on the Noon Business Hour.
Today's episode is sponsored by NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast. Life comes with big money questions. Is it better to max out your 401k or put more in a brokerage account? Does buying a home make financial sense in today's market? Should you use extra cash to pay off debt or invest? NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast has the answers. Their finance journalists break down investing and budgeting strategies to help you build wealth and navigate major financial decisions. Make smarter money moves. Follow NerdWallet's Smart Money Podcast wherever you listen.